This is Lucas Kuehl with the Hill to Hill podcast, and we're here today to talk about one of the more surprising characters in the Democratic primaries, Mr. Andrew Yang, Silicon Valley entrepreneur turned neo-Luddite presidential candidate. One of the staple policies of Mr. Yang's platform is what he calls a freedom dividend, a $1,000 a month check paid by the federal government to every American over the age of 18, regardless of work status, need, or any other factor. In the verbiage of Mr. Yang's website, this is his take on a universal basic income. So we're here today to talk about universal basic incomes, we'll discuss the history of UBIs, how support for the UBI has waxed and waned over the decades, and we'll assess, in a small way, some of the arguments for and against the UBI from both the left and the right. We'll also discuss the contemporary political context around the universal basic income, the particulars of Mr. Yang's freedom dividend proposal, and perhaps make some projections about a UBI going forward. As part of the conversation, we'll talk to Cornell master student Anna Roos. We also have Hill to Hill podcast regular Mina with us. Mina, I'm glad to have you here. I was wondering if you could help clarify for us what exactly is meant by the term universal basic income.
A universal basic income, like most terms that have spent multiple decades in public discourse, has come to mean a range of things. But at its core, it is defined as a periodic cash payment unconditionally delivered to everyone on an individual basis, without means test or work requirement. Other terms are used to represent the same idea. A citizen's basic income or basic living stipend, for example. But they all represent a system of social support in which the government provides every citizen over a particular age with a cash payment. That payment is not conditional, meaning it has no work or willingness to work requirement. And it's not means-tested, meaning everyone receives the same amount, regardless of need. There are a number of closely related social support systems that have been bounced around at varied points in the last 100 years, be they negative income taxes or guaranteed minimum incomes. But these differ because they are either means-tested or non-universal. For example, the Bolsa Familia program in Brazil provides every poor family with cash support. Often, when people use the term UBI, they include these closely related welfare systems. So, in that case, UBI just means direct cash support paid by a government to its citizens. Notably, Andrew Yang's freedom dividend is a true UBI in the strict sense as it applies to every American over a certain age.
All right, so for some history about the UBI. The idea of universal basic income is first verbalized in the 16th century in Thomas More's book Utopia. It was popular amongst some United States revolutionaries, Thomas Paine in particular, and entered more serious political debate in the mid-part of the 20th century. The United Kingdom created a federal allowance for second and subsequent children of every family in the 50s, and the United States started a series of negative income tax experiments during the 60s. Interestingly, the UBI has come to be understood primarily as a policy of the left. However, it was Richard Nixon who first proposed a negative income tax to Congress in 1971. Nixon believed that the UBI was the best way to reduce the bureaucracy surrounding the social welfare state while retaining a safety net for the poor. There are still those on the right wing who support a UBI. For example, Charles Murray, in his 2008 book, In Our Hands, A Plan to Reduce the Welfare State, proposed that the U.S. eliminate all existing welfare benefits and instead pay every American $10,000 a year. There are also those on the left who support a UBI as part of a wider belief in social welfare. At various points, socialists and civil rights advocates have embraced the universal basic income as a crucial policy to ease the burden on the poor and to restructure the need-based relationship between workers and employers. Many feminist thinkers also support a UBI as a way to help answer the pay gap. Some environmentalists also believe that a UBI is a necessary piece of a wider restructuring of commodified work, which is necessary to create a green, sustainable economy. All these disparate interests and more make up the political support network behind a UBI.
Interestingly, another group has embraced a UBI in recent years, one we might not expect to support a policy that looks very much like wealth redistribution. These are wealthy businessmen within the tech industry, like Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk, who have gotten on board with a UBI. Their support is based on projections of the future of automation. Basically, they theorize that in the coming years, the growth of automation will create technological unemployment as paid employees are replaced by robots. This unemployment would destabilize the labor market, increase economic inequality, and create a greater need for social assistance. A universal basic income would address this problem by creating a safety net for workers laid off by this wave of automation. Andrew Yang is amongst this breed of tech bro UBI supporters.
Mr. Yang is, of course, anything but a frontrunner for the Democratic nomination. However, it is still rather impressive that a complete outsider who is not exactly the most natural political speaker in the world has done as well as he has thus far in the campaign. That success seems to suggest that there is some support for his take on a universal basic income. So, we should assess some of the arguments for and against Mr. Yang's freedom dividend. We should first understand some of the arguments surrounding UBIs in general. Here to help us do so is Anna Roos, a Cornell University master's student interested in public policy.
Welcome to the Hill to Hill podcast, Ms. Roos. We're here today talking about universal basic incomes, and I just wanted to ask you like a little bit about kind of the typical, some of the typical critiques you hear of UBIs. So the first one that I think you hear like kind of maybe the most often, particularly for people on the right, is that the UBI will like create unemployment because people will stop working. What do you think about that?
Yeah. So the basic argument is just that if you give people money, then they won't want to work anymore because working sucks, and then they'll be lazy and no one will do anything. But I don't really think that's true. There's been some studies about this, and when you see a UBI implemented, people don't stop working. It actually turns out employment goes up. So like in Alaska with the permanent fund dividend,
The permanent fund dividend is like this a policy where Alaskans basically got a UBI out of like some oil fund, right?
Yeah, so it's not really a UBI because it's like $2,000 a year, so not anything you could live off of, but it has a UBI structure. And so actually just last year there was a study where they checked to see if people stopped working once they started receiving this fund, and they don't really. I mean, so some people do quit, but it's mostly parents who want more time to be with their kids and like take care of them, but overall employment actually increased. I think there was like a 15% jump in part-time employment. You could look it up. But so basically the theory is that people with more money, people are going to buy more things, and this creates additional demand for jobs. So, I mean, that's not a perfect study, right? Because it's not a UBI. But there have actually been real studies with UBIs that do cover the entire cost of living in other countries like Namibia that show pretty similar results.
So one of the other kind of critiques you hear the most, right, is the idea that like, well, basically, it's a critique that the UBI should actually be means-tested, basically. You know, why not just give money to those who need it instead of, like, funding the children, you know, these, like, rich people with a UBI, too? What do you think about that?
So you're, like, are you getting at wage trapping?
What is wage trapping?
Yeah, so wage trapping is the idea that with typical social support structures, your support needs start to go down as your salary comes up. Because you just don't need it as much because you have all this money now. So some people, especially right-wing people, will argue that people are disincentivized from working hard and raising their salaries because they don't actually see any benefit if their social support goes down the same amount as their salary goes up. So people argue, like, again, it's just like a laziness thing. Like, you just get lazy the more you have is, I guess, the argument.
Yeah. Do you agree with that idea?
No, I mean, I guess I just don't know anyone who wants to make less money. I don't know if those people exist. I feel like even people with like really bougie, cushy jobs who have all the money they need, you know, more than they need and more than they need to support their kids and like put their kids in good college and like have nice retirement funds and, you know, whatever boats and cars and things they want. Like they still are trying to get raises, right? Like they're still trying to get more customers at their company like make money. So no, I don't think that would make people work less.
Yeah, I totally agree. So I guess the last one thing I wanted to ask you about is like, you know, amongst lefties, kind of the big alternative you hear for UBIs is federal jobs guarantees, right? Like that's what Bernie's answer to this whole solution has been. So do you have any thoughts on jobs guarantees?
Yeah, so I mean, so jobs versus UBI is like a classic lefty debate because lefties are down for both. But for the job-based camp, I guess it's mostly based on monetary theory. Like, basically the idea is that if you pay a UBI to everyone, you're going to end up with massive inflation. And then, so everyone just has more money, but then landlords just raise rent. And, like, the cost of living generally will just go up once you've given people this money. Mm-hmm. So if you give people jobs instead, you're pumping money into the labor market itself. So you're spending money on labor instead of just, like, putting it into the economy. And I think that makes sense. Like, there's problems with both, but I think we already over-prioritize work when it comes to welfare, right? Like, you shouldn't have to be able to work to be, like, a valued human being. And obviously, different people can work to, like, varying extents through things that they have no control over. So I don't think that we should punish those people for that.
Yeah.
But then there's also, like, so if we did labor guarantees, people are worried that, like, we're going to create more useless jobs, like, more paper pushers doing administrative shit and, like, you know, more gas pumpers in New Jersey, which we don't really need. Plus, then this gets into the whole thing about, like, what's going to happen with AI and, like, do we optimize efficiency or giving people jobs?
Yeah, just, right, right.
It's just a whole shithole. But, I mean, it's worked in the past. Like, one of the most successful things that the government has ever done was the CCC. So, like, you know, there are things that we need people to do that are generally for the public. So I think it could work.
Yeah, okay, awesome. Thank you. So, now that we understand a bit about the arguments surrounding UBIs in general, let's look at Mr. Yang's plan in particular.
Now, this gets a bit technical, but there are a couple of important specifics about Mr. Yang's freedom dividend that the left has criticized as well. First, Yang has noted that people currently receiving welfare benefits must choose to give these up or be ineligible for the UBI. In other words, individuals could not receive the freedom dividend in addition to pre-existing welfare support. Additionally, Yang plans to pay for his UBI by introducing a 10% value-added tax, a tax on the production of goods or services a business produces. Unfortunately, as Vox pointed out recently, empirical data suggests that value-added taxes turn out to be quite regressive because they land primarily on the consumer. Poor people spend a greater percentage of their income than rich people do. Thus, they have a greater percentage of their income taxed under a VAT. When you consider these two factors together, it turns out that anyone who chooses to stay on pre-existing welfare benefits will actually lose money under Yang's UBI fund. Presumably, this would apply to anyone who currently receives more than the $12,000 a year the freedom dividend promises. That includes, among other people, about half of Americans receiving disability payments. In other words, there are a considerable number of needy Americans that Yang's UBI would hurt.
So, to step back for a moment, it is worth re-examining the politics around a universal basic income. Support base for the UBI is expanding through the issue of automation, at the same time right-wing arguments against the policy are increasingly confronted with studied evidence. An unlikely politician, running with a UBI that isn't even particularly appealing to the left, is finding some success. It seems that there is some political support for the policy. It is therefore worth asking why candidates to Mr. Yang's left have not picked up the UBI. The answer, at least for Senator Bernie Sanders, is a federal jobs guarantee. In some ways, this policy appears more politically feasible than a UBI because it more clearly answers the work arguments of the right. And yet, as we discussed with Ms. Roos, the jobs guarantee has its relative limitations as well. All in all, it seems a policy argument, federal jobs guarantee versus universal basic income, which has typically been resigned to a far corner of lefty discourse, may be increasingly entering into mainstream American politics, heralded by the most unlikely of standard bearers, Silicon Valley bro Andrew Yang. All right, this has been the Hill to Hill podcast, tackling one or more issues at a time. Thanks for listening.